Time for Mac Break Weekly. Oh, this is so much fun. Renee Ritchie's in studio. Alex Lindsay's in studio. Andy Anatko's on a Skype call because he forgot to buy tickets. But we are on our last show of 2014. And, yeah, there's even some Apple news. We'll also talk a little bit about what to look forward to in 2015, including home automation, a giant iPad, and more. It's all coming up next on Mac Break.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 435, recorded December 30th, 2014. Apple's Golden Ghetto. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll have many more happy holidays as you grow and protect your wealth with this award-winning financial app. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover your Macintosh and Apple needs. And it's so fun. We've got both Alex Lindsay and Renee Ritchie in studio. Thank you for flying down, Renee.
Thank you so much for having me.
Renee came down from Montreal for just a couple of days. He came to our host dinner last night, Mac Break Weekly today. Tomorrow's New Year's Eve party, our 24 hours of 2015. And then you go home for 2 days.
Yes.
And then you come back to CES.
Yes.
Crazy.
It's a good way to start a year.
Crazy. Well, anyway, we're very grateful. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks to Alex Lindsay, who came all the way from Pittsburgh, PA.
Yes. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. And unfortunately, Andy Anatko's still home, still trying to find a flight.
Well, you know, as I said, I'm glad I brought my equipment because I was able to set up this corner of the terminal at Logan Airport to an approximation to the studio. So I hope we get a good signal off my phone here. This is going to cost me at least $90 in overage fees.
What's really cool is that there's this thing called the internet. Yeah. And you can like order tickets.
Actually, thanks to Skype, it's like Andy's here. And are you gonna participate in any way in New Year's Eve tomorrow? Or are you?
I have no specific plans for New Year's Eve. I would love to again. I've got the studio set up here in case my flight does not leave Logan in the next 36 hours. I will be more than happy to be standing by. I have a lovely bottle of champagne that someone was nice enough to send me as part of a beautiful gift basket that I've been nibbling at for the past week. Hey. And we will pop that at the appropriate time.
I shall inform the authorities. It's going to be fun. We're doing it for UNICEF, a benefit for UNICEF. And if you go to inside.twit.tv, our blog, you'll see that people have already started donating. We've raised several thousand dollars before we even mentioned anything. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We're trying to recreate, kind of in honor of you, Andy, and Merlin Mann, the Jerry Lewis telethon. You guys always loved that. And we had a lot of fun talking about it. You'll never walk alone. I have to learn that song.
Realize, Leo, that you should have started taking the Percocet at least 3 days ago so that it takes full effect by 1 a.m.
I am really looking forward to it. We did something a little different this year. We started this last year because I thought, well, it'd be fun to honor our global audience and say Happy New Year in every time zone. There are 27 of them. This year, we've got 21 of the 27 time zones represented via somebody on Skype calling us from that time zone. We'll start counting down with the very first country to enter 2015, which will be 3 this morning, tomorrow morning. I'm confused. When? 3 tomorrow morning, 3 a.m. Pacific time, 6 a.m. Eastern time. That'll be New Zealand, and we have somebody. And we're going to just slowly walk down. John's running to give me the time zones. Are we got somebody? Oh, we're getting close now. Who do we not have? We have three. We have 4 time zones missing. 5. More than that? All right. But we're pretty good. You see all the yellow. That's people. The green is people with really good connections. I don't know. You know who's doing this? It's your people.
Yeah, so Anna is working through the... Yellow usually means... Yeah, that we...
We'll start in Arrowtown, Otago, New Zealand with Andrew Smith. The camera's a bit grainy because speeds are kind of slow in Arrowtown. But he will be welcoming the new year at 3 a.m., 1100 UTC tomorrow and on through the day. That's going to be fun. And we'll go to... Now, I don't see, John, I thought we'd have one... We're missing a time zone here. We don't have somebody for the Sandwich Islands or Samoa or whatever it is. Or Jarvis. You're missing Jarvis Island at the bottom there, the 3 a.m.
Oh, these are people.
What, huh?
Don't
yeah.
Oh, these are people. These are not the ones.
I just didn't have the blank.
One more line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I do want somebody at Jarvis Island. It's a bird sanctuary, uninhabited. But it will be the last place on the globe to welcome 2015. It'd
be really cool if we had a webcam down there shooting the birds.
I think so.
In the middle of the night.
I think so.
Always sleeping.
Anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it. And a lot of people coming up. Are any of you, we have a big studio audience today. Any of you sticking around for tomorrow's festivities? I hope. Please do. Yeah. You could stay up from now till then. And then you can, yeah, sure. Sure. Well, did anything happen over the last few weeks since we've been here? We had a great best of. Thank you, Jason Howell, for cobbling that together.
No problem. My pleasure.
A lot of fun seeing all the stupid things I said, about, including me and, was it Matthew Ingram, talking about how Apple was done? That was before WWDC in June. That's my only excuse. Apple is far from done, obviously. Apple's streaming the interview. Did anybody watch that?
No.
Oh, they finally decided.
It's on iTunes. So it's on Google. It's on iTunes. The theater in town is showing it.
It's made a lot of money.
Yeah, not as much as it might have made. They were going to.
Well, so here's the thing that's interesting. So it hasn't made as much maybe as it would have in the theaters, but as a internet mostly like a day and date release,
$15 million.
$15 million is the best Sony's ever done, and I think that. You know, the irony of all of this is this may be what everyone looks back at as everyone thought, well, maybe we could make some money on the internet.
It could be a watershed moment.
I don't think all those people would have watched it if not for the surrounding circumstances. Like you can't translate those into ticket sales.
No, I don't think so.
But it's enough for. I think I agree with what Alex is saying. They had to be dragged kicking and screaming into saying we're going to do a high profile movie release backed up by both national advertising, and it's going to be available on streaming that very day. And this was not a bad result. It might even encourage them to say, well, here's a movie we don't have a whole lot of confidence in. Let's do a second experiment in February or March. I think back to there was a writer's strike in the early 80s that created the reality TV boom.
Yep.
Because
that's right.
The writers went on strike.
That's right.
They had to fill air. And so they said, well, it's not going to get any ratings, but let's do this thing. We'll call it Real People. It's just going to be interviews with people all across the country. And we'll have hosts that just sort of spontaneously say things. And it got great ratings, and it cost damn near next to nothing. And the network said, we would never have put this on the air had we not been forced to. But now that we've been forced to and we looked at the numbers back, let's do more of this. Yeah. Continue to strike, everybody.
So the really interesting article in the New York Times about how this happened. This came out the day before Christmas Eve. Apparently, the president actually intervened with Apple.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah. He tried, and they said they're not. So Apple doesn't. They're on holiday. Should we put on iTunes Connect closes for 2 weeks?
Sorry, we're on vacation, Mr. President.
Well, no, but the process for iTunes is not the fastest in the world.
Anyway,
and when they're closed, and they just basically said we're not going to, you know, go there and start cranking the computers for you. But with the next available spot, you'll get it. And so it got out as fast as iTunes would normally.
Credit to the Alamo Draft House, which is an Austin theater.
That is a great
chain.
Cinema.
Love it. Yeah. They have, I didn't know this, 20 others, including supposedly ones coming to San Francisco. But they were the first to say, you know what, we'll show it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of began the run on it. But Sony had planned to have it in 3,000 theaters for Christmas Day, and instead just a few hundred. Plus, remember, Apple takes a third. I don't know what Google takes. But
that's better. So the third is
how much
better.
The theaters take.
Theaters,
I thought the theaters
split.
Gave them the whole
tickets. I don't think Apple takes a third for movies.
Oh, no?
I think for indies they do, but I think for studios they sometimes even lose money still.
Make a deal.
Yeah.
I thought the theater deal was
weighted. So I think it's weight.
Like ticket sales go to the movie company, and then the theater gets the popcorn.
So I think that it's.
Which is, by the way, more lucrative.
Right. Well, yeah. I believe, and I'm not positive of this, but I believe that what happens is it's weighted. So the first couple of weeks, the percentage is much more leaning towards the
movie company. Right.
And then it goes back to, you know, as it goes. And that's why you're able to have these kind of second run theaters that run them that can do it for a lot less and make it profitable. So I believe that's how it works. And someone will probably correct me. But
initially, before you jump on the bandwagon and blaming the exhibitors. The FBI had told theaters, remember the hackers said, we threaten 911 style violence if you show the interview. The FBI had initially told theaters, treat it like a bomb threat, credible until proven otherwise.
Right.
And then Obama says in public, I wish they'd called me. Which, and I feel like what he would have said to them is, look, we know that we can assess this threat, and there's no chance that North Korea lack the capacity to do that.
Well, and I think that a lot of times there's things that he would want to say privately
that he wouldn't say in public.
Exactly.
Right? So far, no problems, except that it's a crap movie.
Yeah.
But other than that,
all this,
you may get nauseous from the movie.
All this over the wrong movie, most likely. Yeah. But I still think that the issue is that when you look at it, still proves, I don't think we've seen very many movies that have sold $15 million worth of tickets. I don't know if any have sold that kind of level. And what that, it's not so much that makes it so you're not going to start seeing $100 million films, but if you're an independent filmmaker or you're Sony Classic Pictures, or some of these other ones, looking at, well, can I do a $2 million budget? And, you know, it now might be viable to do a $2 million budget and get my money back. And that was
Veronica Mars movie.
Yeah, well, there was a huge machine that occurred that used to exist around Blockbuster. Blockbuster and all the other rentals, where you could be guaranteed, what you do is you get into distribution deals and you'd get some foreign distribution, you'd get some cable buys, but the big thing was is that you knew that just Blockbuster stocking Blockbuster would make you enough money to pay for the film. You know, it didn't even matter if anyone bought it, just the rental would be enough. Netflix never really replaced that revenue, and so a lot of that stuff just kind of went away. If people start feeling like they can do a $2 million film and make a profit, that whole and now it's cheaper to make the film than it ever has been because of the hardware is less expensive. There's a lot of things that are more readily available. At a $45 million film or a $100 million film, I don't think that it necessarily adds up. But as you know, art house $2 million, $3 million, $5 million, Blair Witch Project kind of stuff.
But you see, you're still left with the same problem though, where if you want I use the word professional actors not as a way of insulting anybody who doesn't get $500,000 minimum for a movie, but like you're not going to get like a Kevin Spacey, you're not going to get an Allison Janney, you're not going to get like these people who have like 20 or 30 years worth of credits behind them and can really sell a role when the entire budget is $2 million.
The whole machine that occurred before didn't have those actors either. And there were a lot of tier one or two down, you know, it's the kind of the Rutger Hauer.
The Steven Seagals.
Yeah, well, Rutger Hauer was the king of a lot of these little films. And I'm a big fan of Rutger Hauer.
He must be.
We used to do Rutger Hauer fests at
my
house.
He was in Blade Runner, right?
Yeah. He's in Blade Runner, but he did all these. He did these, like, what was it?
Some Hauer?
Angry swordsman. Yeah, it's really, because they're really cheesy.
Angry and he's German, Leo.
There's something very fun about having, you know, drinking whiskey and watching Rutger Hauer.
Hey, man, I got to write that down. That's my new motto.
You had a point a long time ago about
Apple. You've seen movies. He's been in a – so he did bit parts
in a lot
of big
films. By the way, many people don't know this, but he's made of gold. Solid gold.
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, look at
that's
that.
The luminosity of his talent, Leo.
you had an interesting point a while ago.
Before you move on, I just want to clarify that I don't mean that you should only have movies that have like big name brand actors. I'm saying that I think that we're going to recognize 10 years later that most of the really a lot of the meat of these movies is based on having really talented people who aren't at a stage of their careers where they don't need to support, you know, 4 ex-spouses and 8 ranches in Montana.
Well, but
it is going to be what kind of a team can we assemble for $2 million that are going to enjoy this work or even going to take a cut for this 2 months they're going to be working just to say that they worked on this really great project.
There's an interesting rumor going around that Jimmy Iovine is going to negotiate exclusive deals for iTunes. And it'll be interesting to see if, because Alex has talked about this for years, whether Google Play, iTunes, Amazon start getting into exclusive arrangements.
Just as Netflix
like
has.
Netflix has.
And it's been very good for Netflix.
Yeah, and then those markets start to open up because you have serious money behind just the
bad
streaming
for
stuff.
Consumers, though, because then we have to have a bunch of different boxes. So we could, like Apple, you have to have an Apple TV, really, right? I guess you could.
A lot of us have all of them. I mean, I have Netflix on my Apple TV, and then I have Hulu.
Of us are different.
You get more
than
free
a lot
Bono
of the rest
albums
of the world.
Deal.
Yes,
but if you only have an Apple TV, you have most of those services available to you at that point. You know, whether it's Amazon
Amazon.
It's not entirely an Apple TV or Apple world. I just don't. I
don't
see a world
Google,
in 10 years from now where there are fewer. I see a world 10 years from now where there are going to be fewer bands like U2, like Coldplay, like Foo Fighters, where they really are based on having a huge album release and making a lot of sales that way. I think there are going to be more bands that really will grow up starting with their first work at age 12, 13, 14.
It's already happening.
Self-distribution. Like, yeah. Why do I need to talk to Jimmy Iovine? Why do I need to make a deal with him to release an album to one outlet when I can have the entire internet?
And will that happen with films, too? I guess it is sort of with YouTube.
I think so, too. I don't think we've seen plenty of Jonathan Coltons in the music side of the business. I think we're going to start to see Jonathan Coltons in movies too. People who can, and we're seeing them already in the form of easily consumed entertainment like game videos. But we're going to have people who can make short videos or short movies at a budget and with a realistic framework where, so long as they keep making these regularly and build up their fan base, they can't make $6 million per picture, but they can make a couple hundred thousand dollars every time they go up to bat, and they go up to bat once every year. So I think that I really think that's where it's going.
I've heard
the same rumors about Jimmy Iovine. I just don't know how that really plays into where the music industry is going.
He's the interface to the old school, and that still needs to be supported. And there probably will still be blockbuster movies. Not some guy in his basement's not going to make Terminator 4, but at the same time, I think there's going to be, as there is in music, this rise of the independent. And it's going to be it's going to be great. It's good for everybody. And then people like you, Alex, who have the skills, who have the equipment of the crew. You wouldn't make a major motion picture. You might very well make a picture for YouTube.
I've been writing short films that were getting very close as I slowly accumulated all the hardware that we
now's
needed
the
to
time.
Do it. Is that but my interest was like, I might want to do feature film someday. Yeah. But I wrote we have like 10 or 12 of them right now that we're getting ready to record. But the idea is that we're not interested. What we're interested in is a whole bunch of money around the making of it and the process rather than
also with crowdsourcing opportunities with a Kickstarter and Patreon. Everything becomes easier. And I think this is what this tells Hollywood, the old school, there's maybe some opportunities. But really what's going on is what's happening on YouTube, what's happening on independent.
And there are things that Apple and Netflix and others bring to the game. You know, there is press. You know, a lot of people tell you front
marketing.
Well, front
same
page
thing with publishers.
Front page on marketing. iTunes is a big deal. You know, like that sells a lot of stuff. You know, and Apple pressing it, possibly running ads that this is the next Taylor Swift.
And as hardware gets more comparable, and like this hardware is enough, the software becomes more important again. And then you want almost like gaming consoles. You want exclusives to drive eyeballs to your service, and that helps you promote all the smaller brands and bands and movies as well.
Yeah.
Well. I think also of interest, the fact that the EU has forced Apple to offer 14-day no-questions-asked refunds for App Store and iTunes downloads in the EU.
I think that's just really messy.
it's the way it's set up is hard. I mean, they've done refunds before. You could always go to iTunes, report a problem, and ask for a refund.
But on Android for a while, you had a 24-hour window Windows Phone 2. I don't know what's happened on Windows Phone, but I think that still exists. But on Android, they made it 15 minutes.
Yeah, it gets smaller and smaller because developers complain. It's
the concern
it's
is
hours.
With 2 weeks, it's 2 hours.
It went back up to two hours.
The concern, of course, is and 2 hours. I don't think is a big deal, but 14 days means you could download a game, play the hell out of it, or download an album, play the hell out of it.
Download an app and get your problem solved and then not have decide you don't want to pay for it. And it's hard on developers, too, because that money gets basically ripped out of them as well as it does Apple. So.
I presume this is something the EU forced them to do.
Yeah.
UK, Germany, Italy, France, and other EU countries. And this is for iTunes, App Store, and iBooks purchases.
I don't know. I keep on thinking the EU is committed to keeping their countries as far behind as possible.
The EU, it's very, we've talked about this a lot on Twig. Because, as you know, Jeff Jarvis is crazy about EU regulation of Google, and probably rightly so. But one way you could characterize it is here in the States, we have this great distrust of government, and I don't know what it is in Canada, but in the U.S., a distrust of government, but a trust of corporations, kind of in both cases a little bit unwarranted. And in the EU, it's the opposite, a trust of big government, but a major distrust of corporations, particularly U.S. corporations. And I think that's what this reflects, is just as with the Google stuff.
I just think we should just see how that works for them.
So Google, presumably, Jason, would have to do this too in the EU, I would assume.
I think they have it available. I believe that it said somewhere in the article that it's available. They just don't.
They do it for music subscriptions.
Okay.
the Schaffner's saying consumers come first, but you have to maintain the viability of your business. And if any app you can buy, you can get a refund in 2 weeks. People will just buy the apps, play the games, and refund them, and there'll be no money for people to make the future games.
There's
short-sighted.
And I think that the other question is that whether Apple decides to do, and they obviously haven't here. And Apple tends to just try to manage it. But, you know, what if you gave developers the ability to publish regionally? So developers could just say, I don't want to publish in
the can uncheck for now.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. That's what happens.
That's what they should do, is allow developers to decide, well, I don't really want to serve EU if they're going to keep on doing that. Because, I mean, obviously things have changed pretty quickly in Spain.
Most books you can read in 2 weeks. So really it's a library policy, and it's free.
Yep.
And if I'm an author, I might resent that a little bit.
And it may
decrease the amount of content available in the EU.
The great developers, like, you know, people like Will Shipley, people who do like Vesper, if you write to them, you say, have your problem. They want to refund your money. They want to make you happy. They want to do this, but they don't. They want a relationship with you at the same time.
I still think that Apple's policy in the States is wrong, too. There is no demo. There is no return. You have to beg. There should be a window of some kind where, even if it's just an accidental purchase, you should be able to quickly.
Will Shipley on Twitter this week, he put up a thing saying there's only two requests for that in the Apple Radar database, and he asked people to go in and duplicate it because if they don't see they don't do it.
A lot of developers,
having movies of what the game is going to look like is not the same as me downloading it and saying this is terrible.
But I think a lot of developers have adjusted to that, where they are giving you a light version or an in-app purchase.
That's why you see free and paid versions.
That's the new demo.
But that just clutters the place.
I think that the two ones. I think the in-app purchase makes a lot of sense.
It was supposed to be demos originally.
Why did they kill that?
Free would be free, so you could download. They had it wasn't that they killed it. It's that they never allowed time-based demos. They didn't want people to be confused about the functionality that you got. The original idea was you'd get like a level to try out, and then the in-app purchase would unlock additional levels. Right. But it turns out people don't pay to get rid of ads. People don't pay to get extra levels. They'll just play the first level, then go look for the next free game.
You could argue that freemium was discovered that way. That people said, all right, well, let me make a free version. I mean, we've had it for longer than the iTunes Store, but it certainly came into its own with in-app purchases and free. And
there's only two things we'll pay for. We'll pay to get our car back on the track faster, or to have a better-looking car than Alex has. Instant gratification and ego gratification.
Have you played Trivia Crack? It's the funniest thing. So this is a game my mom got me into, and it's really ugly. It has a paid version with no ads and a non-paid version, but there's always in-app purchases. And they call it Trivia Crack because you play the game and you want to play and you want to play. And then if you lose a certain number of games, then you have to wait 45 minutes before you can play anymore or pay 99 cents. And then then it becomes a day that you have to wait. And so I just feel like
I think one of the best solutions that I've seen.
Yeah, there it is. It's a fun game.
I think one of the best.
Trivia Crack, not track. Crack, like crack.
I thought that was your nickname for it. Like, it's Trivia Track.
No,
but
it's called Trivia Crack.
All right.
They make no bones about it, my friends.
It's got a big pipe in the front of it.
Don't start playing.
No, I think one of the best uses of this has been Field Runners, where you pretty much play the whole game. You don't really think much of it. But if you want more points to buy the little extras, and you're not winning enough, and I have to admit that, you know, every once in a while I just...
Do you do that in Field Runners? You buy a little?
Like, yeah, it's horrible because I'm trying to, you know, I have this whole, you know.
But I feel like this is almost slimy because they're taking advantage of your own personal weakness.
Candy Crush. I mean, all the games are casino model.
But I don't really have a problem with it because I'm just playing and, it, you know, it's
just a buck.
I do. Oh, no, it's more.
I spent $300 on Simpsons Donuts. Do I have a problem?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I meant, do you have an ethical problem with it? I still feel that there's going to be some point at which Apple is going to have to. Every time that they put that slide in the next keynote saying, and we've handed over $8.1 billion to developers, there's the Greenpeace guys out front are going to be shoved aside by the people saying, yeah, how many people who have an addictive personality shoveled into that versus how many people who have the ability to not buy donuts are paying for that.
Right.
I think it's one factor among many that I believe that in the next couple of years, there's going to be a cleaning house of the App Store. A lot of policies that they had that were made perfect sense when they introduced it, or things that were we'll set it up this way and then make modifications as necessary, and that will work for a few years. But there's so many disgruntled developers about developers who don't have a real connection to, don't feel a connection to their users, as you say, the inability to get demo versions going, the inability to easily get refunds on stuff, and now this idea where there really is a lopsided amount of revenue coming in from just people who are in, like, you know, iOS Skinner boxes, just tapping buttons to get a pellet, tap a button to get a pellet, tap a button to get a pellet, that they're going to have to do a lot of cleaning house in order to make this continue to work for the next 5 years.
Couple of notes from our chat room. Scooter X says the 14-day period in the EU is extended to a year if a business fails to properly inform consumers of the return period. So you got to be very clear. You got 2 weeks to return this. A year. And then
a year.
Ask Jeff in six, who's in, I think, Sweden, right? He says, you're thinking like the Motion Picture Association, Leo. People are not thieves by default, and it is more expensive to not sell apps in the EU than to offer refunds to a small percentage. I guess that's the question, is how many people will take advantage of this? Maybe you're right. Maybe I shouldn't assume that people are going to do that.
In my younger years, I took advantage of a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, but that's... I think the record industry says this, too. No, kids growing up today don't buy music. But that's, I think those are people who probably wouldn't be spending that money anyway. You wouldn't have been spending that money
anyway. Does it translate to physical media? Like if I go to Best Buy, buy a Blu-ray, a Guardians of the Galaxy, bring it home, open it, watch it, and then go take it back.
Like, you could do that. And people don't do that.
Well, it depends on, like, some of them have policy. It's a little harder to do that. Like, it can't be opened or it can't. Right. There's all sorts of different regulations.
It's pretty easy to push a button that says, I want my money back. Delete this app, I want my money back. Or delete this book. I don't know. We'll see.
If 99% of people start returning apps.
I think a lot of reasons people don't return stuff. I mean, there's stuff that I don't return, which I should legitimately return.
All the time I should return
stuff. I can't
get
around to, I got to find the box or Amazon's going to charge
me. A lot of stuff I wish I could.
And it'll be interesting to see how this is implemented. Is it still going to be the report a problem button where it's sort of buried and you have to go digging for it and Google how to do it? Or is it going to be a big giant red button on every app purchase?
Apple dominated Christmas 2014 in activations, in app sales. A very, very good holiday season for Apple. 51% of device activations were Apple, 17% Samsung. Oddly, 5.8% Windows Phone, Nokia. This is according to Flurry.
Well, do we know that all the Nokia is Windows? I guess
it is.
It is, yep. All the smartphones.
Except for the,
there are a couple of Android. There's a weird Android thing, but no, I don't think that's significant.
So it's a good thing they didn't fire Tim Cook at the beginning of the year.
I didn't say
Haunted
that you
Empire.
Fired
no, no, you didn't.
Oh, Haunted Empire.
Haunted Empire, indeed.
Yeah. And app downloads were also big. App installs. Average daily app installs, December 1st through the 21st, one a day.
I think that's just a reference.
That's the reference.
I don't think it was. Was that reference?
That's the unit.
I think it was just
It was 150% more on Christmas Day. But that makes sense. You get a new iPhone or new iPad, you're going to install a bunch of apps. Flurry tracked 2.5 times the number of app installs on Christmas Day compared to an average day in the first 3 weeks of December. You're right. That's just a reference number.
Also, gift cards are being activated that day, too. So,
And I should point out that Samsung is the big one here, but there are probably other Android devices. Well, there's LG and Sony. I still, obviously, it all adds up to less than half since Apple has 51%. Mm. Distribution of new devices by form factor.
I thought this was really interesting to look at.
Good, because I can't explain this chart.
Oh, okay. So your tan area is your larger phones. The red area is smaller
shrinking,
which is gone.
So the top bar is 2014, then 2013, then 2012. So and then you can see the shrinking small phones from 7% to less than 2%.
Right. The dark blue on the left is full-size tablets.
Like
the
iPads.
Light blue is like the iPad mini.
Yep.
The green is phablet.
Giant phones.
So
from 3% to 13%.
iPhone 6 Plus.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's just amazing how the large phones, and I find that my usage is the same. I mean, I finally, after complaining, after saying I was not going to do it, I finally settled into the 6 Plus.
You did. And I ask everybody this, do you find yourself using the iPad less?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I find myself using the iPad mini not at all, but I use the larger iPad now, which I wasn't using at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, this would...
Yeah, I find the iPad mini like a complete waste. Yeah.
This would support the rumor that there'll be an iPad Pro coming out this year, right? A
12-inch. I would be much more likely to have an iPad if... Well, yeah. Especially if they slowly merge the OSs, where I'm really just getting an OS... You know, that I can, that has a detached, you know, what I really want is a larger iPad with a keyboard, like a clickable keyboard onto it. You know, people make those already.
Oh, you want a Surface Pro 3.
Exactly.
I do, except with a Mac.
Yeah.
No, like it has a kickstand. Oh, I wish I had one.
I don't need the kickstand. But I have to admit, I look at the Surface going, that is exactly what I want, except I just want OS.
Running OS 10.
I just want OS 10. I don't want to deal with Windows.
Yeah. Apple has to do so much to the iPad, the 9.7, just to make it continue to be relevant. because now there's I actually like found myself writing thousands and thousands of words just to work out my own thoughts about it and seeing under what circumstances were I would I continue to recommend a 9.7 inch iPad to somebody. And it's not that I can't think of situations which that would happen, but now it's like you walk through that decision tree as, again, you imagine yourself having that talk with somebody at the Christmas Eve party and they know that you're the tech person. So, oh, I want to buy one of this. What should I get? And I keep landing on squares and say, well, it sounds as though you really do want an iPad mini, or it sounds like you'd be really happier with an iPhone 6, or it sounds like, gee, do you know that for just a few $100 more or a couple $100 more, you can get an iPad Air 11 inch that will do really everything that you want this iPad to do and way, way more, and it'll be much more useful. It's so hard for me to find the square that says, oh yes, the 9.7 inch iPad is absolutely the right one for you. And a lot of the reasons why aren't because it should be 12 inches instead of 9.7, or that it should have a detachable keyboard. It's stuff like it should be easy to run two apps side by side. It should be easy to switch between two apps, because this the way to get a value out of that $500 minimum device is to offload some of your creative stuff and your productivity stuff off of whatever notebook you're using right now. And it's such a pain in the butt. It really does require a bunch of commitment to really ultralight tablet computing, because otherwise, as soon as you put like a relatively lightweight 13-inch notebook into the picture, that 9.7-inch iPad tends to stay home a lot more than it might have otherwise.
Well, but and I think that again, I think that it's the I think that a larger one with a merged OS, you know, is the thing. You know, what I don't really want iOS.
I don't think that works at all.
Well, let's just say that coming this spring, there is a iOS that runs side by side apps and lets you drag and drop things between apps. That's probably the beginning of what you want, though, Andy, not the end.
Yeah, it's one of the things I like about Surface Pro is that I'm surprised that modern apps, you know, they're Microsoft's Windows 8 multi-touch apps. I'm surprised there isn't a much bigger and better library than there is. But really, all I want is the ability to have one window that has if all I have is one Windows 8 window, a pane, and then just simply a column next to it that simply has my Twitter client, or simply has like something I can do, keep an eye on a movie or keep an eye on my inbox. That'll do me. And so if all I had the ability to do was to take the iPhone articulation of an app and have the iPad articulation of a different app side by side on the same screen, suddenly my 13-inch MacBook stays home a lot more than it would without this update.
The code is in there for iOS 8. It'll do one-third app, two-third apps, one-half apps. So we'll be happy.
And I think the number one reason that I go to my iPad, and now it's really with the iPhone 6 Plus, I think that the it's become more of an issue for me, is that number one reason I go to an iPad is because there's apps that only run on an iPad, even though the resolution on my phone is plenty to support it. You know, so the thing is it really frustrates me that I have to go to an iPad app, you know, because it's only sold on, like, there's certain, you know, sketching programs and all those other stuff or some of the sound programs that I use that say, oh, they're only iPad. I can run them. I mean, I could run them on my phone if they just didn't define it as an iPad app.
I think that's changing, though, because I believe there's a rumor that you'll be able to target, like, iPhone 6 Plus exclusively
and
make those big screen apps smaller.
I don't even know if I would use the iPad at all after that. Like, it's literally like the handful of apps that I can't use over, you know?
Yeah. I'd love to know the thinking behind that, because to me, it's just insane that at launch you can't design something and target an iPhone 6 Plus specifically. It's like saying, yes, we put this amazing 10 kajillion horsepower engine in one of the most beautiful cars we've ever made, but we also basically hardwired in this sail on the back of it that you cannot detach. It's like, why did you give me the power of a big screen without letting developers really make use of it yet?
Yeah, I don't think – I don't know if you'll be able to target iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, but maybe you'll be able to target just iPhone 6 Plus if you want a big screen app.
Yeah. It's not like there's 100 different iPhones out there. It's a small enough sample size that if a developer really wants to create an experience for each of the, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4 iPhone sizes right now, they should be able to do that.
I mean, I'd be happy if the OS just defined the iPhone 6 Plus as an iPad.
I think that's a monkey paw wish, where I would want it, but then when my wish is granted, I'd be sorry I made that wish. Mm-hmm. I think that it's an interstitial size that needs its own interface, but when you see a big app that's been scaled for that to take advantage of that, boy, does it fly. I really do appreciate the differences between like the Google Docs app and Pages and other text editors, where you can see that although that wasn't targeting this this size, when you see one that is just a harmonious balance of the interface and the editing area, that's when I look up thinking that I was just going to test out this little keyboard for about 20 minutes, but I've actually written now for 3 hours because I really just was able to get into the zone because it's such a nicely paired system of keyboard and hardware and software.
Man, I love that split view controller on iPhone 6 Plus in landscape mode.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
You use that?
Yeah. I use that. It's like, Leo, I have an iPhone. So I'm using my iPhone, yeah. And all of a sudden I turn it and I have an iPad.
Yeah.
Turn it back, I have a phone again.
And how many apps are now taking advantage
Nowhere
of this?
Nowhere nearly enough. All yeah. the Apple
I think that's
apps,
kind of the issue. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of iOS 8 stuff is very slow.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been talking to developers about this, and there isn't a specific reason for it. And developers are never hesitant to complain when they're unhappy about something. It's just that for whatever reason, making an app not just compatible with iOS 8, but a celebration of iOS 8 is just not a high priority for them for some reason.
No. It's fragmentation, isn't it? Isn't that the word that Apple used about Android?
It's not fragmentation. A lot of them will complain that it's become incredibly hard for them to repay that development cost. That people won't pay for new designs. They won't. They consider them like entitled to them. Like
Have not enough people bought 6 Pluses to make it worthwhile?
Well, so last year iOS 7 was a huge thing, and Tweetbot came out with an update to make it look like iOS 7, and they charged for it. And people said,
"No,
we're not paying for that." And they said, "Well, user experience is the most important feature. This is the biggest update we've ever done. It's completely just a new skin. I shouldn't have to pay for that."
Yeah,
I think a lot of people are unaware of that time spent in updating an app is money spent, and that's one of the reasons why there was so much bad blood about the switch to iCloud, which was kind of forced. Another edition ago, because this was kind of forced on people saying that hey, if you want to continue to have your app in the App Store, you're going to have to support iCloud, and now all of this time and money was diverted away from the new features they wanted to put into their apps, and was diverted into making iCloud syncing work, and was just held together with spit and old twigs. And it was just like a lot of them felt like I just wasted 8 months of development time on a feature that now I can't even use anymore because it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so that's why a lot of people might be a little bit gun shy, to Renee's point, to say that we can either continue to make our app work really great, or we can invest a lot of time and money into supporting features that people are not really demanding yet. And there are a lot of developers out there that are creatively intrigued by every new opportunity that Apple builds, but most of those developers are not the people who are like, I've got a payroll, I got to pay three people, and I got to support an office space, and I have to figure out if I'm going to have my people spend 3 months working on something, it has to be something that users are absolutely going to relate to and pay for.
Will we see a 12 inch iPad?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think 2 gigabytes of RAM and the AX
that makes a big difference, doesn't it?
A chipset is a big clue as to what Apple's got planned for the iPad.
We're going to take a break. We were talking at the dinner last night about Apple's long-term strategy and some two interesting hires that might tell us something about that. Renee Ritchie has some insight. But let's take a break and talk about our sponsor for the show today, PersonalCapital.com.
That's something I don't have anything.
You have no capital? You know what, Alex? How old are you?
I'm 44.
When do you want to retire?
Never.
You may never get to retire because you don't have any retirement savings. So personal capital is about just knowing. You know what? You just still don't have to retire.
I have a lot of max.
It's just knowing what you've got, knowing where your money is, knowing if you've invested it properly. The deal is, I think this would be a great New Year resolution. Everybody, I'm going to eat healthier. I'm going to work out. But more importantly, I think in the long term, is make sure your money is working for you properly. That it's not being wasted on fees. It's not being frittered away on management fees or your broker's fees. Personal Capital will help you do all of that. It's free, like that, personalcapital.com/MacBreak. It's secure, and it should be on your to-do list for 2015. More than 700,000 investors are now using Personal Capital. You get a complete, in fact, this is my personal, I'm not going to show you like all the details, although you could see I spent $15,000 on the host dinner. No. But you can look at your portfolio. You enter in all the stuff. You can see how it's doing. You can get an investment checkup, which is really fantastic. See how it's going with the current asset allocation, how it's going to be in the future, and compare it to a target allocation. You've got an advisor that you can use if you wish, but you don't have to. Your retirement fee analyzer. 2% of earnings lost to fees. That's not good. Not good at all. I don't live in Canada where the government's going to take care of me in my old age. No.
Thank goodness.
So here's the deal. It's something you should try today. It's free. You just go to personalcapital.com/MacBreak, set it up, put it in the accounts. It is absolutely secure. You don't have to worry about that. And I'm telling you, you will be very, very happy with the result. Personal, absolutely free, totally secure, personalcapital.com/MacBreak. I've been using it for a while, and I'm very happy. Personalcapital.com. So we were talking at the dinner. I hope this is not out of school to mention this.
No, I won't name them publicly if they don't want to. But
okay.
In general, I think there's some interesting trends.
What's going on?
So like, if you look at Apple in general this year, and the things that were super public, like Kevin Lynch coming out and demonstrating watchOS, watchOS doesn't look like iOS 7. They spent all this time making iOS 7 look a certain way and then making Yosemite look a certain way, and yet watchOS is something new. It's got a new system font. It's got a new way of doing things.
Right.
It's got icons that look almost like Yahoo from the 80s. It's really interesting as a new design language. And you add to that things like the 8X processor. It's got not only a custom chipset but a custom graphics chip now too. 8 cores on there, 2 gigabytes of RAM. It looks to me like when you look at the kind of people that they're hiring and the kind of projects that they're doing, that there is a very large movement to start moving all this mobile technology forward. Extensibility, it's been around a year already, and not only does it allow us to do inter-app communication, but it's a foundation for projecting information back and forth between iOS and the watch. Handoff is moving things back and forth. And I think when we look at that, to Alex's point earlier, I don't think there'll ever be a point where iOS and OS X are merged because Apple really truly believes that these are separate operating systems. But I believe that there'll be a point where it won't matter, where the device will understand our context and present us capabilities based on where we are. And the watch is a great point. If you have your arm out, if I'm just sitting here with Alex and I get a notification, it just taps my wrist. There's no loud buzz. There's no noise, so he doesn't know about it. Then I tilt my wrist slightly, and I get a short look notification, a little bit of information. I bring it closer to me. I get the whole notification. All of this works with handoff. So if I see a small interaction, it's too hard to do on a watch.
Right.
That same thing. It's not just Cloud Sync, because in a Cloud Sync, I'd have to launch the app, launch the document. It would be in the same status, but it wouldn't be in the same place. This will just have that app there waiting at the exact same place that I was before. And it'll let me move back and forth. If I plug a keyboard in, suddenly I go, oh, now I have a keyboard.
Wow.
And it'll understand that. And I think that's where Apple is maybe too slowly for some. But I think when you look at all the clues we saw this year, that's where they're heading in 15 and 16.
It makes sense, because the one thing it really does is it makes you want to use all Apple products.
Absolutely.
And I get left out in the cold. I could buy an Apple Watch, but now I have to use my iPhone. And if I really want handoff, I'm going to have to use my laptop and my Apple laptop and my iPad, and suddenly I'm all Apple.
And they reward that by making the experience just incredibly seamless and compelling for you.
And I think that they're taking advantage of what used to be a disadvantage for Apple. Remember that back in the old days when Apple, because they owned everything, it was like they were trying to develop everything. But now they're, you know, what I think Steve Jobs started and what Apple's doing now is when we own the entire ecosystem, yep, it works better because we have control of the hardware. So the hardware matches the software. And I think the one thing Apple's gotten good at that they weren't good at a long time ago. When I say long time ago, 5 to 8 years ago, is that the teams are actually talking to each other a little bit more. I think the reorg that was done.
And that was Tim Cook's goal, obviously. Yeah.
Sometimes I felt like I knew more about what Apple was doing.
Right. The guy who runs continuity and extensibility for Yosemite also ran it for iOS, so there was no more separation of operating system. Mm-hmm. It was one guy running a feature.
A lot of times you'd feel like you'd be talking to guys at Apple just at a convention or whatever, and you feel like one team's working on one thing, another team's working on a completely different thing. And they're integrated, but they're not talking to each other at all. Now, I think that integration is starting to show up all over the place.
Yeah.
There's another tweak to this in that not only does it help to convince people to have all Apple stuff, but it also convinces them to have every single Mac and every single iOS device running the exact same latest version of the software. Because if you've got that one last iMac or the one last MacBook that's running 10.9 or 10.8 or God forbid 10.7, that's going to tell you that, well, why can I access photos on this iMac that used to be able to share it before? Well, that's because everything's running Yosemite except for your one iMac that runs 10.7. Oh, well, how do I upgrade that? Well, you've got an old iMac that doesn't run 10.10, but have you seen our new Retina iMac? And I'm curious to see how this plays out. because it's great if you walk into the store with your American Express Black Card and you buy all new stuff. But that's not necessarily the world that everybody works in. This is a story that I'm sure is going to fall on familiar ears now that we're recording after everyone's back from their Christmas visits to like aunts and parents and sisters and brothers, that you spend a certain amount of time in somebody's rec room taking a look at why is my Mac not working, and the first thing you check is okay, what, let's do a system version. Okay, you're running OS 10.5. Now here's why some things are slowing down and here's why some things aren't working, and then you try to explain why they might want to upgrade, and then you run into the brick wall of yes, but everything outside of seeing a beach ball cursor every now and then, this is working fine. What problems I'm going to encounter once I start running something that's from this presidential administration? So Apple has always had the wonderful benediction of we plan everything out. We have everything working together extremely well. A lot of that, however, is conditional upon you always having everything up to date. And in the past 2 or 3 years, having modern software, it's just I'm just saying that it'd be interesting to at some point discuss. There is a wall, I think, has dropped down that wasn't there before in the Mac line, particularly where if you have a Mac made before then, you're kind of left behind. If you have a Mac made after then, you're perfectly fine. It might be 2008, it might be 2009, but it's something that I'm navigating in my office right now too, because I've still got an older MacBook that's kind of my bedroom MacBook that is useful for a whole bunch of stuff. It still works fine. It's got maybe a little bit, you know, it's got a green line of longevity on the left side of the LCD, but otherwise it works fine. I've not updated it past 10.8, not because I've refused to, but because it's just never occurred to me to do so. And now I'm facing that, okay, I guess I have to upgrade this to 10.10, and let's hope that everything works fine.
I think Bluetooth LE was one of the big dividing lines for Apple, though, because they made it everything, all the new stuff is so dependent on it that older Macs that don't have it really were.
NFC change a lot of power management,
too?
A lot of the networking stuff.
Does right. NFC change things too?
The way they're using it right now,
say so.
They're using it right now is just Apple Pay. But in the future, you know, it took them a year to make an API for Touch ID, so maybe a year from now.
You know, I look at my Sony camera, which has I can move pictures off of it onto a smartphone using NFC, and I couldn't do that with an iPhone until the 6 came out.
So if you look at what they're doing with the Apple Watch, and especially CarPlay, even Apple TV, is they've totally decoupled interface from device now. Like the iPhone 6 Plus, iPhone 6 work because iOS is no longer bound to a pixel grid. That interface just scales to fit the phone, it scales to fit the watch, it scales to fit the car. Why can't we have camera play? So I get a Canon camera, and my iPhone knows it. And that's their philosophy. Because
will they do that, though? That's not an Apple product.
No, but see, unlike Samsung, Apple's never going to manufacture the range of equipment that a Samsung or an LG makes, and they're not going to license an operating system the way Google So the only thing they can do is take over interfaces. And I think they've shown with the Apple, it doesn't matter whose TV I have, I just stick an Apple TV on there in AirPlay.
Right.
Doesn't matter what car I have, as long as it supports CarPlay, that QNX system just gets totally overtaken by Apple.
Right.
And in the future, if my camera can do that, my appliances could do that. Apple gets to offer, all this stuff works better with Apple. Well, manufacturers have an advantage. It's a huge customer
base. I think a lot of the manufacturers see their interface. The two things that I think that they see their secret sauce for their cameras, because a lot of these cameras are commoditized, they're very similar. They see their interface and the way that they manage the raw data as kind of their secret sauce, you know, because a lot of them are using the same chips. A lot of them are using a lot of the same features. I think it's a mistake. I mean, I think that a lot of us would love to be able to, and we've seen a little bit of Sony experimenting with it by having a lens that just attaches to your camera. Attaches to your phone, you know, that just, but it's still, you know, I think there's a lot of us that would love to be able to run, whether it's our video camera or still camera, being able to have a graphic interface to change the settings and so on and so forth, I think would be very compelling. I think it's a hard press to get these Japanese firms to give up that control. But I think if they did, the first one that does it wins. Because there's a lot of iPhone users. Just look at how many installs there were. There's a lot of iPhone users that would just be like, I'm buying that camera.
I think a lot of pro photographers are using Apple gear. So if a Canon or a Nikon goes along with
this. Look at the car. Like I have a Toyota that was before it got integration. And I said, can I just upgrade the sound system? And said, no, you got to buy a new car.
Right.
But once I have CarPlay, every time my phone is updated, every time iOS is updated, it's updated. And the same thing could be true of all these other appliances.
Do you think it's likely?
And I do.
I think that eventually someone's going to do it. I think that I think it's more likely when we look at video cameras. I think we're more likely to see someone like Red or Blackmagic or AJA provide that kind of interface, then we're going to see Sony or Panasonic or Canon.
Well, you'll never see Samsung because their goal is to make the entire line.
TouchWiz everywhere.
Yeah. Go ahead, Andy. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But I was just going to say that I think that I'm very, very cheered by CarPlay because it's if there's a limitation that Apple has not proven they don't have, it's that they're great at making things that work with other things so long as they make all of the things. However, what if you don't want to buy an Apple-compatible camera? What if you don't want to buy an Apple-compatible printer? What if you want this tablet that is not made by Apple to work with this Apple computer? Then you start to run into problems and butt heads. So if Apple were to start to not just make this a way to reach the phone into the car, but a philosophical way of saying we are never opposed to people buying whatever hardware they want. We just want them to have a safe and a very, very consistent experience. If they're philosophically are starting to say that we want to start to make the transport technology that will let us interface between anything we have to anything you have, that would be one of the best culture shifts, or the second best, number one being people talking to each other inside the company, but the second best cultural shift would be for them to start to have an embrace and extend sort of technology.
I wonder if there's an example. The only one I could think of is printers. Apple for a while made its own printers, the Image Writer and the Laser Writer, but stopped.
Yeah.
And they created AirPrint, which seems to be well supported by the printer manufacturers.
David Gelfman, the guy who did, all that stuff.
But anything like healthcare, HomeKit.
HomeKit, yeah, big example.
You can say that, but
CES is a week away.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting.
I think where we start to see this is CES.
Because there's been Passbook, and now there's HealthKit and the HomeKit.
Much as we make fun of Apple being too controlling, whenever things don't work, it's usually the parts that Apple doesn't control. Like it took CarPlay was being worked on for 5 years before they could even announce it because car companies work so slow.
Yeah.
And the manufacturers now are a big holdup for HomeKit because they're actually making physical objects.
Will we see stuff at CES?
I think so too.
There's always been a big home automation pavilion, and it's always been very disappointing because nothing talks to anything else. And Samsung's bought SmartThings, and they're promising to put this into their appliances this year.
I think one of the things that a lot of these manufacturers have to weigh is that I think that home automation is too important for Apple to leave it. I think it's too important to Apple to, if it doesn't work, if HomeKit doesn't work, I think Apple moves into manufacturing home devices. And I think
Google's already acquired Nest and Dropcam. Google's making a big play in this.
So I think Apple's I bet you somewhere in the back. Rooms when they're talking, it's basically like, you're going to develop this or we're going to develop it. We'd be happy for you to develop it. It's something we don't want to deal with. But if you don't, we're going to just, because if Apple built a Nest-like device, I'd buy it. And if Apple bought,
home automation. Well, it's ironic because it was Tony Fadell who built the Nest.
It's amazing how careful they're being, though, because there's no home.app. There's a health.app, so you have an Apple front end to all the health stuff.
Where is HomeKit?
So you basically, when you make a HomeKit compatible accessory, your app has to be able to enable and set up HomeKit for everything.
And why hasn't Hue done that? Why hasn't Belkin done that?
A lot of these apparently are going to roll it out, but the interface is strange because Siri looks like it's going to be the easiest, most common interface for it.
Love that.
Siri, good night, and then it turns off. Everything.
Wonderful.
Siri, my country home, please make it warmer. I'm on my way.
Right.
All those sort of things look like they're coming.
And then you say, I'm turning heat up to 120 degrees. Enjoy.
The AE34 antenna is close to failure. 100% failure in 23 hours.
We replace the unit.
And there is the problem. I mean, when I first installed my Nest, it kind of went crazy. And it would turn the heat up really high, and then it would make
and
it really
Apple
low.
Apple wouldn't accept that, right? Apple would say, this is not okay.
I think there was a certain level of expertise. Well, also letting people install their own.
We saw with CarPlay, though, I mean, some of them had wonderful multi-touch screens. Other, Ferrari had horrible little...
Is there incentive for Apple to do this after all? Aren't they making money, printing money right now with their existing solutions? Do they really need to...
They've never been happy with now, though. Apple's one of the few companies where, you look at Apple as a contrast. Apple never mistook their products for their business. Some companies believe, Windows, that's our company. We're going to put everything behind it, and we'll ride it into the ground. Apple's like, yeah, we make iPods now, but that's just an instance of personal computing.
Right.
That's going to go down. We have to have the next one ready. So you see with the iPhones replace the iPod, the iPads replacing it somewhat. They have the Apple Watch coming on. They're really concerned about obsoleting themselves. And that's a good – they don't maximize profits on any one product, but it means as a company they stay viable longer.
Right.
I think if anything, they don't add enough.
Well, they don't move fast enough for you and me.
I mean, I think that like, for instance, the HomeKit thing, I think that we'll see what happens at CES. If a lot of people jump onto it, I think it makes sense. But I do think that if we don't see a lot of people jumping onto the HomeKit in CES, I think that Apple should just...
New Apple TV is HomeKit Hub?
Feel like that the problem is that Apple makes proprietary solutions. And so if they're at best half of the market, and it's the U.S. they're half of the market, that's not 100% of the market. And so it's more concerning. And certainly for me, I don't want to have to use an iPhone to take advantage of all this stuff, but I would.
But they want
but there's
to.
An enormous
They want me to, but I don't want to. And yeah. So if I'm another company, I won't say Samsung, but if I'm Frigidaire, or I don't even know if they exist anymore, but if I'm another company, would I choose a thing that's going to lock me into a great ecosystem, admittedly Apple, but only half of my potential
market? You're not
locked
in. So that's the brilliance with CarPlay, is that it's running mostly QNX. You could theoretically do
it
with
Android. So
it
works without an iPhone.
So it works with any. They just want to, Apple wants people to say the best experience will be if you have an iPhone. If you don't have an iPhone, you log in, you'll use the QNX system.
I'm Ford, I would even be reluctant to do that.
Well, they can implement Android in the car as well. The thing is, it's a completely modular system as long as you have the base unit. It's the same with the television.
I don't think you're going to see a third party company in most cases say the best experience is with Apple.
Apple wants to say that. It's like
Apple wants to say that with your television,
like you can buy any television you want, put an Apple TV on, and Apple will say, "Look at this amazing experience you get with AirPlay." Samsung doesn't care what Apple's saying; they're making their own box.
And we can all complain. Yeah, but the thing is that the choice that you have here is, you know, when Apple starts built, if Apple builds it, it may not be perfect, but there's a lot of things I complain about with Apple TV. You know, the interface drives me a little crazy. Until I got a Vizio 4K TV at Walmart, you know, for the house, you know, and the interface.
Oh, they're all terrible.
You're just like,
oh my gosh,
the Apple
Samsung
TV.
My Panasonic has ads.
They have ads.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Okay, but you compare that now to the Roku 3, and what's your experience like?
I haven't used the Roku 3 yet.
Mm. Yeah, see, but
love
it's
the Roku
like,
3. Except it crashes once in a while, like a lot.
For me, I see a mysterious reboot maybe once a month, maybe a couple times a month.
Me too.
But the difference is that like my Apple TV is 100% reliable, 100% stable because I don't turn it on, I don't use it because I also have a Roku here, and so it's an interesting kind of dynamic that Apple puts into play. Like, Apple is going to make the Apple Watch. It's probably going to be like almost all major Apple products, at least 90% there. Well, let's say 85% there at launch. But everything that's in it at launch is going to work perfectly. Meanwhile, Android Wear, the first range of watches, not really great, but boy, they only took a couple of months to get their act together with one firmware update, and then now an update to the entire operating system. So they're not afraid to iterate and maybe even screw up in public. And so Apple does not want to do a really big update to the Apple TV until they have a lot of other pieces in place. It's obvious that there's, with all the hires they've been doing and with also just how fallow the Apple TV has been laying for the past couple of years, there's going to be a huge update in 2015. But meanwhile, nobody should really want to use it. All it delivers right now is AirPlay. And meanwhile, Roku is just so much better.
Even Chromecast, which is $35.
My problem
offers some very interesting choices.
My problem is that when I can't find the controller, I have two little kids, and when I can't find the controller, I always know I can just pull my iPhone out and start running the Apple TV, and that's the number one reason I use it.
I lose my Apple remote every day, every freaking day. Fortunately, most of my remotes work with it.
I mean,
they think they're Apple remotes.
But that for me, being able to open up my phone and be able to still get back to my TV, because right now with my TV, usually I only have to worry about turning it on.
Yeah.
You know, once it's on, then I just run it with my phone.
And going back, if you imagine Apple TV as a HomeKit hub where it's doing all of the, because HomeKit supposedly works remotely, like you can be in Rwanda and control your whole house and stuff. Mm-hmm. But that just means you have to have something always on in your house to relay all those.
Somebody will
Apple
lick
TV
this. Is the most sensible thing to be that always on computer.
I agree.
That's so.
Somebody will lick this home automation thing. Apple has an opportunity, but if I have to have an iPhone and a Mac to make it work,
but the question
it
is,
won't
is it,
work with my Nest and my Drop Cam.
But still, I think those the Drop Cam and the Nest are still tiny little. I mean, they've scratched the surface of their market. Apple
or my Samsung refrigerator, which works with my smart
there's
things.
Different customers. Like
and the other thing to point out is that these are, the Nest thermostat is about 3 to 4 times more expensive than whatever you're going to get at Home Depot. And when you talk about people who have the money to spend something like $200 per thermostat, you are talking about someone who probably also has an iPhone and probably also has a MacBook too. So that might be, that what we're discussing might be kind of irrelevant to Apple. Apple has the people who are willing to spend money for that kind of gear.
That would make me sad.
Well, it's a different kind of customer, though, Leo. Like, Apple's never chased huge amounts of customers. They're happy with a subset of customers. Yeah. And we have other companies. Like, Google wants everyone to be able to use their stuff, and Apple wants to be able to make things for people who just want to buy something and put it down.
Again, good for Apple, not necessarily good for consumers or third parties.
We can choose between companies that suit our needs.
Go ahead. I always feel the need, correctly or incorrectly, to interject and say that there are people who can't afford to buy the things that Apple is making.
Or choose not to
is a different story, but I'm saying that there are people that they can admire a MacBook from a distance. They can admire a $350 Apple Watch from a distance. They can admire a $500 iPad from a distance. But then it's like, well, let's go look at my wallet. Well, I've got $300. What can I do for $300? Well, you can buy this watch for $200. You can buy this Kindle for $70. So I think that Apple should be praised for a lot of things. That has to be tempered, however, with the knowledge that there is a whole economic class of people for whom an Apple product is only going to be an aspirational thing, and that these people still should have the benefit of being able to save money on their electric bill. They should still be able to let their kids have a reading device as opposed to having one that has to be shared amongst the entire household. I'm just saying there's a big, big ball of data here, and that no one part of it is more interesting than the rest of it.
There's a risk to Apple. I acknowledge that this is a great business model, except you don't want Apple shouldn't want to become a golden ghetto where we have a very lucrative portion of the market and we're happy there, but it is a ghetto, it is a silo, it is a gated community, and Apple has kind of pursued that all along.
I think that's just what's happened. Okay. I don't think they pursued it. I'm sorry, go ahead, Alex.
When I look at my service, we do a lot of live streaming. We do not serve there's a really small product projects. We just don't serve them. Like I can't do that. You know, like I don't have a system for it. In the same way, I think Apple can't do that. Mm-hmm. And do what they want to do. You know, you can't concentrate on that many things, but we try to, we think about it, but we go back to what we're doing. So, but I think that there's a lot of people out there who are very comfortable. We can talk about the macro.
But this comes back to the discussion of, for instance, this Sony camera.
Right.
And whether it would ever have some sort of CarPlay, camera play interface to an Apple device. And if I'm Sony, I'm probably not going to do that because it locks me into
What Sony would do is build an SDK, you know, or some kind of interface. Like here is, whether you're on Android or iPhone, you can interface with your phone. These are the instruction sets that you can make calls to
the phone. As a consumer, I would love that.
Well, the Sony camera would detect if you have an Apple device and offer you camera play. It would detect if you have an Android device and offer you Android on the camera.
It kind of does already. But that's what this NFC thing does. Then you put Sony's app, Play Memories, on your iPhone or your Android phone.
Still, that's a closed system.
But it's a Sony system.
What you really want from these phones is you want to have a way to call certain things.
I want my stuff to be everywhere because I don't want to have to program every device.
That's what I'm asking for.
If the car has CarPlay, I can walk into it with my phone and have my stuff. I don't have to worry about setting up something else.
I love that. That is the future. That's what the cloud brings you. That is absolutely.
But not just the cloud, because the cloud does sync, and sync understands the current state of data, but not the current state of my activity. And that's what things like CarPlay and handoff and all that is doing. Is it's transiting our activity along with our state of data.
But cloud has given us that expectation.
Yes.
That I can go anywhere with anything and still have my stuff. And I think you're right. This is the next logical piece of that.
It's what Torsten Hines was laughed out of the building for saying that mobile is going to be an endpoint.
Yeah.
But he was absolutely right.
He's right.
Yeah.
You think of it more as, as an accessory. It's not.
I spend more time on my phone than on my computer.
Everybody does that.
With the exclusivity thing, though, I think in Apple's vision of it, they believe that they only have the capacity to make a few products. If they try to do anything else, they'll ultimately fail or make bad products. But they're happy to let the technology that they make sort of be expressed by other companies in other areas. So you'll always have, like, the Xiaomi's, and you'll have the Lenovo's, and you'll have companies that say, like, look how many MacBook Air-like laptops you can get now much more inexpensively from a wide range of
apparently
companies.
Not from Xiaomi. Even, according to 9to5 Mac or Culta Mac, I'm sorry, Luke Dormel says, despite the blogosphere going crazy over this from gizmokina.com, this is not Xiaomi making a complete ripoff of a MacBook Air. Xiaomi says no.
Yeah, that's their not problem is that people are so ready to believe that, and that's not the best thing for
but
their
they
company.
Did it with the phones, didn't Absolutely. They? I mean, they shamelessly copied the iPhone. Why not copy the
Well, like shame is a good thing to have?
Right, not in this case. But it can't run on, you know, here's the difference. It can't run OS 10.
No, that's the same thing as the Surface commercials, which was funny when because they stopped marketing the Surface against the iPad, started marketing it against the MacBook, but then said, look, we have a USB port.
Yeah.
Which the MacBook has.
Guess what? You have a USB port.
But it doesn't have OS, but you can't compare that without OS 10.
We don't have
Windows.
OS 10.
I mean, that's what makes these, I don't like the competition ads anymore because you can't, they're not the sum of just hardware
head
parts
to head.
Anymore. Yeah.
It's not head to head. And so, so who cares if Xiaomi duplicates the hardware of a MacBook Air?
Absolutely.
If it doesn't have OS 10,
right?
Who cares? And in fact, let's face it, every single Windows manufacturer has made a MacBook Air clone. That's what the Ultrabook is.
Which is why I think like the Surface ads. Go ahead, Andy.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, we're all in the studio, so I think you're being left
Poor
on the side.
Andy. He's stuck out there on the East Coast.
That's because I still have the remainders of my Christmas Eve, Christmas Day cold. So perhaps it's better than
it's better that way.
I'm like John Travolta, where they wheel the TV into the schoolroom.
Bubble boy,
still.
Yes, bubble boy.
You have a kindly face. Keep your pledge dollars coming in to help little boys like me. I often have like not just thoughts about the technology itself, but of the attitudes about Apple, the attitudes about these products. And I don't think that Ultrabooks were really a copy of the MacBook Air. It's merely a direction those kind of things were naturally headed in. And I don't know. I cringe a little bit when I hear. I was going to seed this because I think this is a half formed thought. I'm just saying that I often cringe when I feel as though we're putting like a sticker, a gold star on Apple's forehead or a gold star on someone else's forehead, when really they're just companies that are trying to make successful products that they can make a lot of money off of and that will make their customers very, very happy. And if Surface is being compared to the MacBook Air incorrectly, and I think that's kind of an incorrect comparison. I agree with you, Renee, chiefly because it's like comparing an iPad to a MacBook Air. The iPad is not going to compare favorably to that. The MacBook Air is not going to compare favorably to that. They're just such distinct objects. I'm unfortunately at the end of my test cycle on the Surface 3, and I'm going to have to send it back to Microsoft soon. And I'm glad that I've had some deep soak time with it, because what I appreciate the most about it is that so long as you don't want to have this standing in your lap, if you're in the situation where you tend to carry a computer to a coffee shop and then put it on a table, boy, that Surface is a much more comfortable thing to work with than either of the MacBook Airs that I've tried out. In many ways, it's even more comfortable to use than my MacBook Pro.
If only it had OS 10.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying that if Apple decided to make a kickstand screen. With a touchscreen that ran Mac OS, that would be my next Mac, no question about it. Because every complaint that I have about my MacBook Pro in front of me right now is related to the ways they cheaped out and cut corners to make this notebook profile work for them and make the size and the weight work for them. Whereas if you have a detached screen and you have an Apple wireless keyboard, which kicks the butt of every keyboard on every MacBook that's available right now, and the ability to move the screen wherever you wanted to, that's an interesting idea. And I'm glad that there are companies that are prosecuting it. I'm sorry to be babbling because, again, it's a half-formed idea. It's just that I think that we need to move as the thing that sort of bothered me over the past year or so has been this idea of we have to say that Apple is winning in some way, or we have to say that Apple's number, or if you're on the other side of the conversation, that Apple's numbers are not as significant compared to this. I just feel as though this is a wonderful, wonderful world of all kinds of great technology that helps people in ways that we can understand, in ways that we will never appreciate. And we should be happy for everybody who has something that works great for them and that they have in front of them.
Yes, indeed. Right on.
As Andy says,
God
that Twitter goes,
America.
Samsung beats Apple to 12-inch fanless laptop. So there we go.
Samsung beats Apple to 12-inch fanless laptop. Running Windows.
Yep.
Which is, again, I don't.
But I do think.
Remember, you said that OS X, Apple would start. Oh, what were they going to open source it first?
That's what I thought they should do,
and then sell it. Apple for Windows machines.
Do is next generation OS.
Yeah,
some iOS. I still think within the next 3 years there won't be two OSs. So you get that new merged one, you take the old one, and you just open source it and just kill
wouldn't
it.
That be nice?
Just wipe everything out, because then it would cease to be the current OS, and they say we're not supporting it, we're not
cannibalizing your new stuff.
You're really not. And the way Apple moves forward, I think the new OS will not. I really do think that the two of them are just as you look at the different icons coming in, piecing together. I mean, I just feel like if you look at the long-term trajectory, you see two OSs that are pointed, at an angle towards each other. That eventually you see more things that from the Mac that are on the iOS. You see more stuff from iOS on the Mac. I think that they're slowly being merged together. And it's not like Apple's never said that they're never going to do something and then do it.
I think the quibble is whether they merge something or something new that has capacities for both takes its place.
Well, no, I think it's going to be something new, but yeah. I think what it's going to do, it's going to be a...
It'll fill both needs.
It's going to be a slope, though. It's not going to be like suddenly they come out with something that's radically different. It's going to be, we saw this coming, and then one of these developer conferences, this year, next year, the year after, they're just going to go, man, we were really close together. We just thought we'd just do one that works on everything.
It's one of those wonderful arguments, like in 500 years, will there still be iOS and OS X? No, okay, well, in 100 years, well, in 50 years, well, in 10 years. Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, like, eventually that has to be right? Like, eventually we won't have these things.
Yeah, you're going to have one operating system. It doesn't make sense to keep on supporting both of them.
I disagree. I do think that Apple's breakthrough technology over the next 2 or 3 years is not going to be a new operating system, but simply a way of getting iOS and macOS to integrate, and whatever it is that Apple Watch is wearing, to integrate and provide one seamless experience, because that's something that everybody is going to appreciate. It's going to be hard to teach a Mac user, here's why your Mac now looks so much like iOS, and it's going to be so hard to teach an iOS user, here's why we added an Apple menu to the middle of the top of the screen. I think that it's really going to be about, let's continue to sell everything that we sell, but let's basically continue our focus on making one product that is known as the Apple product.
I just think by the time you get to the point where they're merged, you wouldn't have to teach anybody anything, because there's so many similarities between the two OSs that it was almost, by the time they merge it, it'll be almost, they'll almost be the same. But we'll see.
Okay, maybe.
So we started this conversation with the idea that Apple is moving into a kind of a new world with perhaps more, is it more mobile focus? Or what is it exactly that these hires are moving them towards?
I think it's interesting. I think, again, extensibility shows us a lot. It's a world where where things are more modular, where things are projected, previously with my iPhone and iOS in general, everything, I had to go hunt for it. I feel Android was the same for a long time too. Like, yes, they had widgets on the home screen, but I had to leave my app. I had to go to the home screen, find a widget. I had to leave my app, go to the home screen, find another app. You always had to go chasing after what you wanted, then you had to find your way back.
Right.
And now we're getting this generation of apps where data is being pushed into other apps, being pushed into the system. So I can be in one app. I can pull down a shade, get all the widgets I want. I can pull up extensions that give me the functionality right where I am. So the interface has changed from being pull to push. And as you do that, there's all these security implications that come with it. There's all these OS structure things that come with it. Because eventually, to Andy's point, as a user, I don't care where things are. I don't care what this is running, what that's running. I just want my stuff, and I want it in front of me when and where I want it. And that, I think, is a capability we're starting to see here. I think everything that we've seen this year is Apple creating decoupled computing and push interface. And then, Alex can have what he wants on whatever device he wants, too. Everyone's need is served.
I like it.
Right.
I wonder if I could ever have, Apple pushed into my Windows Surface Pro tablet. Then Andy is the best of everybody's world.
If Microsoft says this is just a screen and you can project onto it.
I think Microsoft's moving in that direction. I hate to say it, but I have a feeling that's actually
All remote view controllers, right? I mean, all they did, they packaged remote views in a super secure method, and now they're showing that not only does that go in your device into other apps, but onto other things like the watch. Yeah. So why not?
There are so many great reasons for having a Mac Mini on your network, and one of them is to just be a Mac OS application server for all of your tablets, all of your laptops, all of your everything. Because, Surface Pro 3 running remote access into a Mac Mini, that's a part of a slice of heaven.
There's kind of an example of that here in the studio. We use that Blackmagic router.
Right.
Because we have so many cameras and inputs. It allows 72 inputs, and then you can program it for 144 outputs. And what does it run on? It runs on a Mac Mini. Mm-hmm. And that Mac Mini is on our Wi-Fi network, and I can control that from this laptop, from that laptop, from that iPad. Jason has an iPad that allows him to do all the switching. And all of that's talking back to the Mac Mini, which is talking to the big switcher. It is incredibly flexible and functional. There it is.
And that's
awesome. And I can do the same thing in my office. I can do the same thing right here with the right software.
And when you have it something like it, we do that with the Meraki systems, where all of our systems will plug in. You can do that with any of our hardware anywhere
control
in the world. I can run the switcher in DC from here on my iPad.
In a way, that's kind of home automation, yeah, isn't it? That's the beginning of home automation.
That's the whole thing. I have exactly one cable box, one HD cable box with DVR in my entire house. And and because I've got it hooked up to a Sling box, anytime I want to watch it on any HD screen, I just simply activate the Sling Player app on my phone and then switch over to the Fios Wi-Fi remote. So I'm actually having a full function remote with one app while streaming via another app and be able to see it anywhere I want in the entire world. It's like, an interesting factor in the next few years is that people are losing sort of obedience and fealty to whatever logo that they're actually parked in front of. They really are, they really are believers that I have Evernote. Evernote simply projects itself onto whatever screen that I have handy to me.
Right.
And the fact, and it works really just as well on a Chromebook as it does on my $4,000 gaming laptop.
And that's why I brought up the cloud, because the cloud has introduced that concept to us, and it makes it. You know, on the other hand, we wanted to have Crestron controlled window shades and stuff, and that doesn't talk. If that all talked to some central thing,
right,
then Jason could sit there and lower the lights, rotate the bed, close the shades. We'd be ready.
We'd be at Jason's mercy.
Body playing.
Jason, let us out.
Ooh, the look of love.
But it's super interesting. Like, imagine you could have Final Cut Pro or Logic Pro just detect that you have iPhones or iPads nearby and push control surfaces to them. I mean, there's all sorts of things they can do with now that they have this handoff technology.
All these little fiefdoms, and Crestron doesn't want to do that. And so what's going to have to happen is somebody's going to have enough market share that they can say, look, you, and it could be Google at this point. It could be Apple. Could even be Samsung.
Hopefully, all of them.
It would be wonderful. We're all of them.
But I still think that there's exactly what Andy was talking about. I can go to Slingbox and I can do my DVR and I can do, you know, and that's great for us because we all do that.
Right.
The hard part is, like, how do my parents do that? You know, and I think that integration is still something that is still geeky.
I agree, and I think the problem if it becomes an Apple TV and it just talks to everything. Well,
and I think that still, I think this market's too big for Apple to ignore. So if manufacturers don't go down that path, I think you see Apple start adding, adding automation. Like here's one bit to that, and they're trying to show them that you could go down that path. But they're also, I think, that is kind of a you go down this path or we go down this path.
You're going to CES this year?
I'm not.
You are, yes. Renee, and Andy, you're going to stay at home because you haven't bought your tickets yet.
Only because I did have this idea that I've been talking to like friends of mine, like at the New York Times and other places, where we're all just like staying home this year, and I'm thinking that we should like find some beautiful like resort.
Alt CES.
get a cabana with like a get a cabana just like if we're gonna be just watching this through glass screens anyway, as well be on a nice beach while doing it. And you know what? If we'll set like maybe 2 hours of the day aside where if product reps want to come and like executives want to come visit us, where we'll have the drinks cart, we'll have the beach, we'll look at your new home automation thing. So long as you're out of here by 20 minutes, we can be back to contemplating.
I've been thinking of moving this entire studio to Trinidad and Tobago. Maybe this is the opportunity. Maybe
for tax purposes.
I think I'm just gonna what I have been thinking of doing for CES is just sending someone with a remote
Alex.
Just send someone and then I'll ask the questions in their ear.
Yeah, like, he has a camera on his head.
Telepresence, Alex.
Yeah, telepresence. Alex.
We do have Scott Wilkinson going down. He'll cover TVs. We have Father Robert who will cover anything that he feels like is an interesting thing. Dick DiBartolo, our gadget guy, will be down there. So we'll have people down there. I'll make sure Father Robert goes over to home automation. Mm-hmm. And I hope you will too. And then we'll cross our fingers that maybe the solution is this year. Although I've been going for 10 years praying the solution would be this year. And it hasn't yet.
I don't think the solution will be this year either. I think it'll be next year. I think
it's always next year.
Well, 4K TVs every year for 3 years, right?
Yeah, right.
But now 4K is, I mean,
it took 3 years of CES.
But it's now $850 at Walmart.
Yeah. In case you're wondering. So just to your previous point, Trinity Caldwell did an awesome article yesterday. She spent holidays with her family, and she's trying to introduce them to home automation. So she got them the Hue light bulbs and the Sonos, and she's setting it up for her mom and dad. So she wrote... showed a thing about how to, you know, introduce your families to all the stuff that you can do now in the home.
How did that work for her?
I think it's still a work in progress. But she's got the patience of a saint.
Yeah, see, there's like sort of an exchange of like humoring going on during all these family visits where, you know, 2 days after Christmas, the adult kids are back in their own homes. The parents have their home back to themselves. The adult kids are now changing their hair back to the way it was before their parents fixed it. And now their parents are like, okay, let's get this TV back to how I like it. I don't care that it's supposed to be optimized this way. I don't care that I had the wrong aspect ratio. Damn it, this is the way I like to watch the NFL.
Man, I'm so jealous that you snagged Serenity Caldwell. She has become such a great part of iMore.com.
Yeah.
And she, you guys did a roundtable in review. She hosted that. That pick came out this morning. And your favorite thing from 2014, she liked the WWDC 14 keynote. I have to agree. That was a great keynote. That was a, and you said extensibility. We've talked about that today. Yeah, worst thing in 2014, Peter Cohen says, anything colored in gold?
That's just a Peter Cohen comment, and it's probably directed at people who wear Bruins hats, quite frankly.
iPad 3 Mini Alley says, Serenity says, the return of the App Store review madness. Yeah, I have to agree. And, of course, the bugs. You talked about the bugs.
No iTunes this year. That was the other thing that was a big surprise to me. They integrated.
I was sure we were going to get a better iTunes.
So I'm wondering if integrating Beats is something that pushed that
That's
forward. But there was
up.
No handoff for media. It'd be great to be able to, like, I have an iTunes playlist on my Mac. I start walking away, it just takes over on my iPhone.
Every time we say this, the chat room and people send me emails saying, what's wrong with iTunes? I love it. It's so broken.
iTunes
it's so
on the cloud. The out of date thing is tough because it was built in an era before all the modern frameworks existed. So if you think like there's iWork on the cloud now, iTunes on the cloud would solve so many problems.
They'd have to do what they did with iWork, though, I suspect, which is start over.
Modern web technology.
And people are still bitching about the fact that iWork lost so many features.
Yeah, so Apple's not afraid to do binary compatibility at the price. But if you like, when supporting the PC specifically is no longer as important as it needs to be because the cloud can do a lot of that stuff for us. And you know, iCloud Sync, iCloud, all these things.
I have to admit, we tried to go to Keynote, you know, because I wanted to stop using not Keynote
numbers
on the web. You know, their web version. Yeah. Like we'd upload a file, and it was.
Not a
usable experience. Because we, you know, Google, there's parts about Google Spreadsheet that make us absolutely insane.
Yes.
And, you know, and you get used to building, whether it's Excel or Google, you start building spreadsheets in Excel or you build them in, and I'm not talking about heavy calculations for your financials. I'm talking about organizing budgets, you know, budgets for events or whatever. It is so much faster than numbers. It's not worth, like if you just do it in numbers. But if you actually use the web interface, there's so many features that aren't there. I mean, it literally is like cutting like four of your fingers.
I talked about this with John Gruber on during Fireball, the talk show this week, is that Apple is a very strange organization. Like iWork is all done by Eddie Q's organization. It's not done by Craig Federighi and the software people. So is the iTunes app. So are all these things. They have their own marketing. There's a lot of different organizations in Apple that still haven't sort of been mushed together. And I think that you know one of the ways of getting iTunes into the future is maybe breaking down those walls as well.
Just fire everybody in the iTunes group.
Yeah. See, meanwhile, it's like what we're talking about with the Apple TV. Meanwhile, this thing just gets sicker and sicker and sicker, and people get less and less interested in using it, and they start looking at more alternatives. I really wish that Apple, we could grasp the idea that you have to really keep. You even need to cultivate the plants that you think you're going to be ripping out in 3 years anyway, because if you just rip them out to begin with, you just have this big bare patch that looks ugly. Yeah. And
well, they do the Swift thing, right? Like you don't hear about it for 5 years. And all of a sudden, they announced it at WWDC.
Right. Yeah. No one was relying on the Swift thing that they hadn't actually released yet. People rely on iTunes to manage their devices, and it's so bad that it's like, oh, I know I have the ability to.
Why doesn't a third party write an iTunes? Why is it that?
It's the old argument like email clients. Everyone thought, you know, Apple makes it's terrible, but it's good enough that there's no money for anyone else to make one. And DoubleTwist tried. I mean, they wrote a music client. There are people, but. Not enough to think it's a viable business.
And you look at Google Maps, which is far superior to Apple Maps, but still 60% of iPhone users are using Apple Maps because when you click on the link, it takes you to Apple Maps.
One other story, then we'll get to our picks of the week, and that was Apple last week pushing its first ever automated security update. You all got it, whether you said yes to an update or not. It didn't ask. It just did. And actually, this was a good one. This was a fairly severe flaw that it fixed.
We're angry when they take too long to update stuff, and we're angry when they start pushing out updates.
Well, the good news is this update didn't seem to break anything.
Next thing you know, they're going to be sending us albums over iTunes.
So it went out, I guess, last Monday. It fixed a critical vulnerability in OS X, in the Network Time Protocol, or NNTP. They didn't say exactly what it was fixing, but it was in response to a security bulletin from the Department of Homeland Security in Carnegie Mellon. So you figure it's fairly serious. We know that NTP has, for instance, been used by bad guys to amplify DDoS attacks, and I don't know if it's related to that. But it is a vulnerability, and it was fixed. So does everybody automatically have it? There's no way out of it. You just get it. And I know I got a little note at the beginning of on Monday that said you've been updated.
Yeah.
No reboot. No, because that was a good thing. It didn't need a reboot.
Yeah. No. As far as I know, I mean, there might be a way to go in and disable those things in the future. But it's for years people have been saying that Apple's not responsive enough to security. It takes them too long to put out patches. And
this one they had to put out.
Yeah,
apparently,
and they did it quickly.
It was a 0 day, and they.
Well, and I think that if we look at what happened at Sony, if we look at what happened to all these other things, I think being able to react quickly to security breaches are going to be more and more important. By the way,
capability was added 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. Did we cover the fact that I guess they said that. It's Sony. They said everything's shut down except for the Macs and the iPhones.
Yeah.
No, they said the Macs and the iPhones were fine.
They're still working because the hacks were against Windows machines.
Yep. Yeah.
Actually, we're going to talk about that in about 20 minutes. Steve Gibson's in studio. He's down for the New Year's Eve party as well. And Security Now is coming up. And Steve is going to review the year in security. What a year it has been.
And ended with a bang.
And he will answer the question, so was it North Korea? time now. No hints. Time now for our picks of the week, and I guess we'll go left to right. How about that? Who's left?
Army left.
My left or your left?
Stage left.
Stage left, Andy Yanako.
Okay.
Or is he stage right? He's stage right.
I'm stage right, but that's okay. You have to have a theatrical background in order to understand.
I don't understand this. And upstage is where? Downstage is where? I don't understand. Left.
At least. Just as long as you don't mention the name of the Scottish play, I think.
All I know is Snagglepuss. Exit stage left. So stage right, Andy Yanako. See, Serenity wouldn't know that.
mine is the intersection of cheap, useful, and tiny. This is the miraculous Hutu travel nano.
Hutu
TripMate Nano wireless and pocket travel router, which
what?
Costs
That's
all
so
of
small.
It costs all of $17 on Amazon and elsewhere, and it is a fully capable 802.11 all the way up to N router. But it also it's just packed with all kinds of really cool features. So starting with form factor, it's powered by macro USB, so you don't have to pack another travel brick. You probably already have a brick that will power this. Also, if you want to have a truly mobile router, that's okay. You can also power it from whatever, like Anker or whatever battery pack that you have for a phone extender. But it's not – so it'll do customary things like plug in an Ethernet port, and now, great, and now it's a wireless access point. But you can also use it to bridge one wireless network to the other. It also has a USB port built into it.
I just want to back up there. So you said bridge one wireless network to another, so you can receive and broadcast a Wi-Fi signal.
I have to double check, but I'm going through. I just got this 2 days ago, and I've been running it through all kinds of different paces. But yes, yet last night I had it plugged into. Connected to my home wireless network, and then I had other devices connected to this. So apparently, yes, it must have multiple radios. That is something I absolutely did use yesterday. So I know that's true. But it also has USB, so that if you plug in a storage device, you can turn this into a server.
It's a NAS.
It works with Samba. You can also through configurations set it up as a home media server. So if you have a drive that's full of like MP4 video files, you can stream those video files to basically anything that can connect to this. It has a really good, like sophisticated, like web 12.0 based web administration tool. It's just one of those things where you buy this, you put this in your travel pack, and if you're traveling with your MacBook Air and you thought that this place was going to have Wi-Fi, but you can't get Wi-Fi in that part of the hotel, that's okay. You're not screwed. You can basically put a Wi-Fi base station inside your room. And you can do things. Go ahead.
The reason that I was so excited about the whole it can bridge wireless networks is because at a hotel, you can defeat all of the multiple devices. So you would link this to the hotel, and then all your devices link to that.
Absolutely. That should work. Again, I definitely tested that last night, and that worked fine. And the fun part is to go to the Amazon page where there's a whole bunch of...
Now what are these different... There's the 1, 2, 3, and 4
of Hutus. I believe this is the O2 that I have here.
Okay.
This is O4 is amazing.
HT-TM02. If you go to... They also have the TM03 and the TM04 on the...
The TM04 will take USB sticks.
This one should too.
Does it?
Yeah, it has. Well, again, it has a USB port.
And the beauty part is all the packets are automatically routed right through Beijing. So think of it as a cloud backup.
I didn't run a trace route on the packets, but for $17.99, you have to expect a certain amount of espionage at this price point. I think you'll agree.
$17.99.
It's well worth. Again, 955 customer reviews at 4.5 stars out of 5. It's been around for, and there's a lot of active discussion about different ways that people are using this.
Yeah.
And it really is, people are using it for like ad hoc wireless gaming. One of the things I wish that my Chromecast could do is I wish that I could just simply plug this into the TV in my hotel room and now just use that as a wireless point. With this one, you could just simply use this as your intermediary between whatever device you're Chromecasting from to the Chromecast device.
But it doesn't have an Ethernet jack, or does?
Yeah, it does.
Holy shimoli. Yeah. Holy simoleons.
So if you don't have the latest Chromecast, software, I think the latest actually can do an ad hoc. I have to double check on whether that works or not. But I just love these ideas where it's not the first like travel router you have. I used to travel with an airport express base station with me. But it comes down to, well, why wouldn't I want to travel with that? Well, because it's too big. Well, this is not too big. Well, because I don't want to spend $100 on something I may or may not need. Well, this is only $17. Well, I don't necessarily need to have Ethernet to Wi-Fi transmogrification. Well, that's cool because this will do other things too, like the ability to move files and videos and whatever you've got onto your iPad, because it has an iOS app, it has an Android app, and so long as these apps are on any of these devices, it can connect to whatever this is connected to via USB. So it just seems like a really good thing. Just simply buy it, toss it in whatever bag that has the bag of wires and stuff that you take whatever trip you go to. It will come in handy. I still remember a couple of different conferences I've been to where, because this is back in my airport extreme days, where someone's complaining, oh god, I got to file 3 stories, but like my room is the only room there's no Wi-Fi, and I only have a MacBook Air, and I got to go to the Apple store and buy a cable now because I didn't bring the dongle with me. And I said, oh, that's great. I got Wi-Fi in my room, and why don't I just lend you my airport? And it's just like lifesaver. So this can really get you out of a jam really, really quickly.
So it looks like the difference in models is how much extra battery it has for charging phones. But otherwise, it's...
The O4 has 2 USB connections. Two USB inputs. It has a
USB charger.
6,000. It'll charge your other mobile devices, and it plugs into the wall. So
this doesn't plug into the wall. It's charged by USB.
This is the $18 one, right? Exactly. And that's why it's this big as opposed as big as a power AC.
And they do have some caveats. For instance, it will not bridge iPhone a hotspot. For instance, you can't use it as a bridge.
Right.
But boy, that's really good. $17.99.
Yeah,
yeah.
I have to admit that I bought it on a complete flutter.
It does look like a whim.
It seems interesting. And if it turns out that it's a piece of crap that doesn't work as advertised, I'm only out $18. But I've been spending like the past day or two saying, oh, it does that. Oh, wow, that works great too. Oh, wow, I didn't think that the administration panel was going to be that nice. I would not run a full network on this in my office. But again, as something you keep inside your shaving kit and you just always have it with you when you travel, It's pretty nifty.
Hootu. Tripmate. You can get it on Amazon or just search for Hootoo.
Also on Newegg. But
Newegg as well. Yeah. Mr. Alex Lindsay, what have you got for us?
It's Christmas, so I picked two.
Pick two.
All right.
Why not?
They're both on the iPad. The first one that I wanted to pick, it came out right when our show was 2 weeks ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't talk about it. I was excited about it. Have you played it all with Duet Display?
No.
Oh.
Yeah. Heard about it.
Oh.
This lets your iPad be a second display.
Another monitor. Let me see if I can get it.
Can you do it?
But
how fast is it? I mean, I was a little. So you run the software on your iPad. And you plug it in via USB to your computer.
You take your lightning bolt.
Lightning?
Your lightning connector.
Cable, yeah.
And you connect it up to your machine.
Alex Lindsay is now plugging a USB cable
upside down
into his MacBook Pro. The other end of the cable is going into
his iPad. But Steve Jobs says this is the wireless age in which we don't use wires anymore.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. It's cute. Like, that's a cute thought. you know, but... But the delay on all of these wireless ones has never been, you know, really acceptable, you know?
Yeah.
So as soon as I turn on
the... And also, if you got copper, why not take all the advantages of copper and eliminate the problem?
Crash the TriCaster. Yeah.
Now I'm the only channel available.
We're going to be staring at Andy while you do this demo.
Now I can reveal the reason why I didn't want to be in Petaluma on this particular day.
Anyway, so...
As soon as you plugged in the Duet, the TriCaster said, well, that's it. I give up.
So the...
So you're able to run a second scroll. Look at that.
So
it's true.
And, you're you know, it's...
Show the camera, because they can't see over your shoulder. What's not on?
The Alex's rear shot is not.
Yeah, so he has to turn around and show that camera. There you go.
There we go.
So there's my monitor.
That's his
and
desktop
I'm able
display.
To,
but your desktop has gone dark, so you have to set up mirroring.
I didn't do that before. I think it's because I didn't run the app. I just plugged it in.
So you run an app on the desktop as well as on the.
And I think it gives
iPad.
Me both of them. But when I literally just plug this straight in and it works. Now the thing is that a lot of times for us, we want to have this. You know, we want to have this app. You know, I love the idea, even if, you know, of just having this mirror. I mean, not mirrored, but sent over so I can just sit there and interact. This gives you a sense of what you're... What you
is that
be.
An Air 2? Air 1?
Air 1.
Air 1.
It's an Air 1, yeah.
So it is suggested that you have a faster iPad.
But it works. You know, and I don't
Well, you get
like,
more, you get more, obviously, more responsive.
More responsiveness. But I found that, you know, when I'm clicking on it, I don't feel like there's... You know, a lot of delay.
It's very odd to see a OS X desktop on your iPad,
yeah,
I must say.
Pretty awesome.
I must say.
So anyway, Duet Display, it's...
How much?
It's like $15, I think, or something like that. And it's, you know, again, as a separate monitor that is now in your bag, like you want another monitor for a display or whatever, we are going to use it for things like teleprompters and stuff like that, where you can... Because there's a lot of teleprompters that work with...
A second display.
With iPads.
Yeah.
But I never wanted to use the wireless. I didn't trust it. And so now I can now hook one up into these super portable teleprompters.
Like it.
And so, anyway. So then the second one is called Lightbot. Have you guys seen Lightbot at all?
No.
Okay. So this is for kids. And, well, it's,
you
it's
said
for
Malcolm
kids,
loves
it's a
this.
Lot of fun. Yeah. So Malachi is...
Malachi.
Thinks that... I mean, he has gotten... through most of the levels, and he's 7.
And he's learning programming.
Yeah, and
at
so
the age of 7.
So what it does is all it does is you have to turn the little light bulbs on. And so now P1, see, that's a subroutine. So it says literally do the little thing down below and then go back and do another. And so you're building it. He's learning how to build subroutines, he's learning how to think about instruction sets. He's, you know, and it gets more and more complex. And what I was amazed by is watching a 7-year-old go from the really easy stuff.
Yeah.
To building all these very, very complex moves, and he's thinking it out, and he's also thinking, well, I'm going to test that, and then he's going to, so the whole test process and
this looks like I would like it.
It's
I
a
might
lot
learn
of fun.
The programming.
And then look at this. So he's got there's conditionals that are built into it, and so you can decide to do, you know, and so the thing is that it,
so there's two versions, one for 4 to 6, 4 to 8, and one for 9 and up.
I got them both. So
which one does he like?
He's using the 9 and up.
Of course he is.
So so the
above average.
He jumps back and forth between the two of them, but
I want 9 and up. I want this.
It's a really, really fun. It's a really fun app, and you're sitting there just kind of playing around with it. And but when you think about teaching kids how to program, I feel like this is something they can be doing when they're 7 or 8 years old. Maybe they don't start typing any code until they're 10, which is when I started, you know, typing code. But if I had done this before I had started, I would have been, it's all that flow charting for the old folks.
Yeah.
Who, when you had to build flow charts to think about how you're going to write a program, this teaches you that thought process of building flow charts and making decisions in a much more interactive and fun way to do it. And
it's it is on the App Store, so it's on the desktop, but you could get it. Can you get it for iPhone as well?
I don't know if I only played it on my iPad.
iPad.
I didn't even know it was on the desktop.
It is $4.99 on the desktop.
Yeah.
Now, does it teach kids about the App Store approvals process, or do they want this kid to grow up with hope?
That's gonna be in the Lightbot Pro.
In 2 to 8 weeks, you'll find out whether or not your solution works.
But it's exciting.
And then a lot of times after that,
a lot of times we're trying to figure out whether is it really worth you as a parent, you want you to give your kids a game that they're actually going to play. And then I've installed a lot of apps that my kids. Like, I think, that'll be very educational, and then they don't touch it.
Right.
But watching him over a couple hours just kind of cruise through this and get really excited about, doing that, I think is, it's pretty exciting when it comes to that. So if you've got a younger...
I think for grown-ups.
Family, and even for grown-ups, it's a great way to think, it's a great way to start thinking about programming.
Bought it. I'm playing it.
Yeah.
60 puzzles, 20 stars... You can learn procedures, overloading. You mean it has object-oriented programming, too? Loops, conditionals, challenge levels. Wow. I like it.
I was amazed at how educational it is. Because I was like, I don't know how complicated this is going to get. It's just going to be a couple instructions. But when you start getting the conditionals, when you start having the procedures, which are really subroutines, it's pretty exciting.
I am Lightbot. When so you're done, read instructions, good luck. Press go. Main, forward. I got to do three of those, right? One, two. And then get the light. Now play.
Walk towards the light, little robot.
I can do it.
Towards the
it's
light.
Like Power of Code stuff.
Yeah. There are other programs like this. Tinker is another one. Yep. There's some really neat stuff out there. I think this is fabulous. I am going to walk 2, 3 steps, turn on the light, then another step. See, it's not that hard.
You aced it, Leo.
Wait a minute.
You didn't get it.
I didn't get it.
And then 3 hours left later, he had VisiCalc.
I left out a light. There we go. Yeah, VisiCalc. This is fun. All right, Lightbot. It is available on pretty much every platform. I see Android and Windows Phone as well.
It's just not possible that someone has not built Minecraft using this platform.
Your turn, Mr. Rene Ritchie.
I have two. First one is Procreate, which was a wonderful, it still is a wonderful iPad drawing app. People who use the paper app, it's great for sketching things, but if you really want to do art, Procreate is fantastic. And they released Procreate Pocket now for the iPhone as well. So you have the larger screened iPhones. This is an example of what we're talking about. Now they have the canvas in your hand is so much bigger. So they've put all the terrific tools. It's Savage Interactive, an incredibly good development house. They put all of that onto the iPhone. And on the iPhone 6 Plus, it's just fantastic. Yes, a digitizer with a stylus would be super nice, Apple, at some point. But even with just finger painting using the multi-touch styluses, it's a terrific app. You can draw illustration quality work on there. Really, really great. The second one I feel a little bit dirty for recommending, but I was at the Twit party last night and nobody had heard of it. So I showed it to everybody.
I love this game.
It's a game called Crossy Road. The title is like Flappy Bird, but the gameplay is like Frogger. You have a tremendous amount of characters. You start off with a little, I think it's a little duck. You can get frogs. You can get dark lords. You can get unicorns. There are in-app purchases, but the developer is totally not optimized for them.
It's Frogger.
It is Frogger. It's a
8-bit Frogger.
That's sort of parallax scrolled.
Lego Frogger.
It's gorgeously done. You can in-app purchase more characters if you want, but if you're willing to wait 5 minutes, they'll give you so many characters that you never really have to buy anything.
You know, Frogger was a brilliant game.
It was transformative. It was terrific.
And I think it's time to bring Frogger back in a Minecraft.
And so this, if you're looking for just a time waster over the holidays.
Ooh, trains.
And it is like Flappy. You start to get a little ways, then you get hit by a truck, and you start again. So it's rage of mouth advertising. People get so upset with it, they tell their friends about it.
Rage.
Then everyone wants to try it to see how far they can get, because it can't possibly be as bad as their friend. And then they are, and they get squashed, and they complain about it, and more people, and more people.
For some reason, I'm watching this, I just think, you know what someone should make is a really graphic Frogger.
It's graphic enough, right?
But I'm saying, I bet you that would do really well.
But yeah, you can get it in the App Store, and it is the latest game to hate. on iOS.
And rightly so, yes. Methinks. It's called Crossy Road.
Palpatine Industries, another hate-generating.
That can be but one. So I got these.
Yes. Couple to try to cross the road.
If you're watching live, you might want to take advantage of a great deal for today only on Amazon, which is that SanDisk is offering, or Amazon is offering, or somebody is offering some like 50% off on SanDisk SD cards and micro SD cards.
Ooh.
So camera folk might want to take advantage of this. I bought a couple of 128 gig ones. They have up to U10. They don't have the 40 megabits. I don't see the 95 megabits per second super duper extra fast cards. But there are few that need those.
I remember when we started looking at the SDXC spec. Yeah. And just going, there is no way anyone's ever going to put 64 gigabits on a little card.
They got 128 gigabytes. Yeah.
On a micro.
On a micro SD.
I think the most significant move is that now there's enough capacity on each one of these cards that now I'm terrified of. It's more than I'm willing to lose on a single card failure.
That's right.
And so that's why like I seem to have topped out on camera cards at 32 gigs because, okay, I'd much rather swap out than lose 2 weeks' worth of pictures.
Up to 70% off SanDisk memory cards on Amazon today. And I think that's worthwhile. My other recommendation is something that Jason Cleanthes told me about. Our newest producer, Effin Dunn. Decal Girl? She makes decals for your laptops. And Jason took some of our wallpaper art and turned it into decals for the laptop. This is my favorite. Actually, Lisa and Jason both. You want Jason, bring your laptop over. You can get it for any size laptop. This is $25 for the and it's from Decal Girl. And I think the Twit logo is, it's, if you search for under custom decals, you search for the Twit. Go ahead, bring around here. If you search for the Twit Circuit, it really is nice. They have matte. This is matte, and there's also high gloss finish. It's $25 for the MacBook Pro 15, but you can get it for other sizes as well. And thank you, Jason, for making that available. And I got these as stocking stuffers for my kids, and Lisa has one on hers. And I think I'll probably put this one for the New Year's celebration. I'll put this one on my... and there, you know, it's that 3M material. It's easy to remove. Doesn't
it look great?
Pull it right off. Doesn't that look nice? Yeah.
This part of the show is always so expensive for me.
I know. I bought the Hutu. I bought the game.
I bought them all.
Thank you, folks. Great. We have completed the last show of 2014.
Ooh.
And for those of you, and many of you in the chat room, were saying, hey, are they live?
No, we're all dead.
Are they really doing that?
Are they live?
Zombie Mac Break.
Is this real life? We do Mac Break.
This is just fantasy.
This is just
caught on the landside. Just a break from reality. Open your eyes. Look up in the skies and see.
We will be here tomorrow, as you all know, for a very special event. We're going to do a 24-hour broadcast, as we did last year, the 24 hours of 2015, welcoming the new year, starting all the way from New Zealand, going all the way to Samoa, 27 time zones, 24 hours. It begins at 1100 UTC, that is 6 a.m. Pacific, 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific. On New Year's Eve, and we'll continue for 24 hours after that. I know you probably have plans for New Year's Eve, but if you can come early, stay as long as you feel like it. Can't promise you that every fabulous thing that happens, and there are many fabulous things planned, which I don't know about because they haven't told me. But I can't promise we will make them all available for download. So try to watch as much as you can, and it all benefits UNICEF. And we've already raised more than $2,000 for UNICEF from people who just discovered the listings.
That's great.
We have fezzes. We have lots of things we're going to be selling and giving away.
Fezzes are cool.
Yeah. I love the fezzes. Thanks to Fezzorama for providing those.
I'm going to be there.
Yep.
Me too.
Yep. So a lot of our hosts will. Steve as well.
We cleared our studio.
I will be there remotely.
And Al, and have they contacted you, Andy? Have the producers
I have not checked my email since the show started, but again, if
producers will reach out.
I will be here for whatever times you want me to be here.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We will be back with Mac Break Weekly next Tuesday and every Tuesday in 2015, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 1900 UTC. If you want to be live in studio, as these good people, so many of them,
are, you should just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put out a chair for you. And if you're early, you'll get a good chair. Otherwise, you'll get that one.
You get the bad chair.
Those chairs are not so
the rickety chair.
The naughty chair.
Not so comfortable. We call them the Iron Excellent Iron Young Ones chairs. Reference.
I picked up on that right away, and I appreciate that
you
reference.
You too. You're like peas in a pod there. What else should I say? If you can't be here live in some form or fashion, all of our shows, I can't promise New Year's Eve is going to be done this way, but all of our shows are put out on demand after the fact. Twit.tv/MBW for Mac Break Weekly, or on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, the podcast app, and, of course, the great third-party Twit apps that our wonderful developers have made on all platforms, including iOS. Thanks for being here. I'd say get back to work, but surely none of you are working on December 30th.
Go out and party.
Go out and party, because break time is over. Woo! Thanks, everybody.